Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and this class is The Hidden Work. We're working our way to the book, The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. We've been on this project for several months. I don't know if anybody remembers when we actually started this thing.
It was cold weather.
It was way cold weather. I don't remember it, but... we spent 9 weeks on chapter 12. Chapter 12 alone. This is our third week on chapter 13. It seems like I've slowed down quite a bit in getting through these chapters. But there's a good reason for that, too, because it's exponential, in a certain way, I don't want to say the difficulty of the material. It's not that the material is different. It's that we move further and further away from the regular human realms, in a sense. And if we do, we have to help ourselves develop a language in which to talk about it, right? In other words, there's a well-established language in all of civilization, certainly Western civilization, on how to discuss all kinds of elements of philosophy. But when you walk away from, let's just say, regular, normal human ethics and moralities and habit patterns, the language becomes stretched. It really does. And so part of what we're doing is helping ourselves develop a language. And one of the things that I wanted to emphasize is that a core principle in the methodology developed and presented by E.J. Gold, first presented in the book called The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus, or as we like to call it, HBM.
There you go.
HBM. And HBM, in that, he introduces what is, for me, a staggering idea. And I remember first receiving a copy of this book, maybe in draft form in the 80s, when I was living in Denver and I was going to classes with E.J. Gold's group up in Boulder. And I remember actually sitting in Aspen, Colorado with Mark Einert, and I was studying this book, and it dawned on me the fundamental principle, which is we are an electrical body. I knew that. I knew that in my bones, that we were an electrical being. But then he introduced this topic that we are two electrical beings. Simon, have you worked with the Castaneda material very much?
I have.
Yeah, I think you have. And he talks, for instance, about the dreaming body, right?
Right, correct.
And the terminology that E.J. Gold gives to it is that there's one part of us is a human biological machine, is one type of a electrical body that our colleague Silverdale has indicated is that's the historical personality. That's what's developed by our manifestation here on Earth. Tied to that is another thing, and this other thing is a equal electrical body called the essential self. Our work begins when we begin to awaken, I don't want to say awaken the essential self, but allow it to become activated. Okay? That's the fundamental part of it. So if we're trying to and working with activating an electrical body that is rarely activated, we also have to come up with new language. Now, accidentally, in all of literature, this language has been developed by the great poets and the great fathers of all of the classic religious, like, read some of the Psalms or something like that. I was going to bring the Bible tonight, but then I didn't. But listen to John 1:1, and in the book of the New Testament called the Gospel According to John, doesn't say that it's John's gospel, the gospel according to him. It's not that he wrote it. This is somebody wrote this gospel, and this is his words. And it was, in the beginning was the Word. That's how it started. And so they're clearly reaching beyond the human realm to reach into something quite different. And that's where we are now. So that's why we're taking a little extra time on these chapters. Our goal isn't to rush through them, by the way, but it's rather to work with our group, and in our group to form a space that is an invocational space, that it's okay for the essential self to hang out for a little while. I'm going to have another question for you a little bit later about that, compare and contrast the dreaming body with the idea of the essential self.
Mm-hmm.
And
ready.
And some of the concepts that Castaneda talks about is where he's moving in the dreaming body. I call that, and this tradition calls it, voyaging.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start working in a certain way, what you'll start to see is that it is voyaging, but the voyaging is not, it's neither temporal nor is it logistic. So you're not traveling from this place to that place on the physical map. So like if I walk to the door across the room there, I'm moving the physical body. But nevertheless, if we are voyaging as essential self voyagers, we are also moving, but it's a different map, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A different map. We're moving. We're moving. Our space is moving.
That's a good way to put it.
The space.
You're just kind of being.
We are, and that's it. You're being, and that's the attribute that we come to the table with. We're talking about some of the people are working extensively in this Second Life material, and people were talking about how do you fly a plane. And there's specific ways to move, and then it gives you the exact coordinates of where you are. Well, the coordinates of this form of moving that we're talking about, the inner moving, is just as exact, but let's just say the maps haven't been as clearly disseminated. They're out there. Okay. So anything, Simon?
No, David, no. Nothing has been written so far.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to be, what I want you to do, you need my glasses.
If you can name the page too, David, that you're going to.
Oh, you have your own glasses? Okay. I'm going to have Molly read the header. And now I'm going to read the first paragraph again. Even though we went beyond that last week, it's critical in this form of work to remember the context. Always remember the context. You will be challenged at some point, and I'm thinking about two specific individuals right now. You'll be challenged at some point. You'll be in a space, but then it'll be important for you to name the space. Okay? Not only is it, did you just get there, but then where are you?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I did that.
I know you've done
it. But I don't always. Sometimes it's just vague, a click landmark to hear.
But other times, you know, like exact, right?
Yeah, I've got it exactly as written.
Yeah.
Over in the falls.
Yeah.
Where I left the character.
And
so I'll go back and I'll still remember some.
And in that
transition.
Case. Okay, so let's read the, read that header.
All right. As we take food up into our personal cosmos, it awakens to our own extent of consciousness. What we eat becomes part of us and partakes of our own degree of consciousness.
Okay. So we have to remember where we are. All you Talmudic scholars out there, it's you. You know, when you're studying Torah or deep into the study of like the New Testament, you're always required to remember where you are, the context of the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same way here. He doesn't say when you eat food. He says when we take food up into our personal cosmos.
Yeah, from the minute you see it, really. I mean, if you I don't know when it starts.
Well, when you engage with it, when you engage with it, it might even be that you grow that food.
Maybe just pass it by at the store. You don't know, but you could have grown it from a seed.
Or you might pass it by in the store, which is a point we'll come to in a minute.
Yes, on the food.
But along with the same lines of that opening header, I'm going to read the first paragraph yet again. Here is a method of bringing the machine to life in connection with prayer absolute. Now, when he's saying, here is a method, I'm interpreting that to mean that this book is that method, and the method is working with prayer absolute. Then he goes on the next sentence. The evocation of sacred mood and atmosphere begins with deep contemplation upon the subjective sensing and feeling experience by the man on the cross, which is to say, seeing through his eyes, feeling through his heart, and sensing through his body. That's where this chapter on food starts. I think the author is deliberately trying to say, tell us, don't think this is like another cookbook or a nutrition book or a health book or something like that. The context is we are in, starting with the evoked and invoked essential self. Okay? Do you remember where we dropped off last time? Did I get to the bottom of page 134? Because I think we talked about kosher. Pardon? Yeah. I'm just going to read the next several paragraphs without comment at the moment. These are just comments that the author is making at the time he wrote this. And this was, you know, written, published in 91, but it was written several years before that. And Okay, yeah, so let's, good, because I didn't want to go back over that, actually. So let's just go to the beginning, the very bottom of page 136, to recalibrate ourselves yet again. So this is the last full paragraph on page 136. Not only is the type of food important, but the way it is prepared and the setting in which it is prepared have an effect on the food. Also, the way it is ingested is extremely vital. Several things that he's brought out there, right? That's his little teeny sentence. Now, it's the way it is prepared, the setting in which it's prepared, and the way it is ingested. And I'm wondering, and I actually would love to comment on this, we read that and we've been beginning to discuss this now for a couple of weeks. Has anybody studied or worked with this or experimented with this in their own kitchen, for instance? We used to call this like the invocational dinner. Have you done this? Path World, I'm going to call on you. Well, I've been at your place a number of times, and you have that little cabin up above your main house, and people often gather up there, and you have meetings. Last time I was in Southern California, you hosted a dinner with several individuals, some of who I hadn't seen for a few years, but you hosted that. And what was it like to prepare the food? Did you do anything different? Was the food different? What was your attitude toward the food? Or Aria, you can speak to that.
But we'll say, yes, we have invocation dinner in cabin. Yes, I was much more careful. And Hog Lady says, prepare with love.
Okay, so we've been talking, I don't know if Mark is on. Is Mark Rose on?
Yes.
Yeah. So Mark has been dedicating the first two lines of the classic Prayer Absolute to a particular kind of work that he's doing. And one is physical, one's emotional. Hawk Lady says, prepare this with love. Well, how do you do that? Tell me what the process is like. Put a little meat on that bone, Hawk Lady, or Path World. Just describe it in extremely simple terms. How do you walk into the kitchen? How do you approach the food? How do you approach your utensils that you work with? How do you prepare yourself? And what do you mean, Path World, when you say you're more careful? What is an example of care? Or anybody that's worked with this?
I'm going to read Piangio here, and that very much related to my experience too. Piangio says, I have tried to be more invocational when I prepare my breakfast, moving more slowly. It was as well my experience because when we prepare the food and we start preparing to get into the kitchen, we are the moving center, you know, is moving, and usually you don't have much time, so it's very easy to get caught up. Like this is secondary, really, is because you're not eating yet. But to me, in my case, I guess similar to Piangio, is that. I definitely remember myself and make the movements more sacred because I was involved like in a ritual, although the food was not ready, but all which is involved in the food will require from me a high degree of presence as I was making it. Therefore, we slow down speed and we make every moment count much more. The moment that we are preparing everything was much more intense. There was much graduation of presence in it.
Right. So you work with your presence in the even in your physical movements as you come into the space.
Correct.
So Path World and Hawk Lady, I'd like to suggest an experiment. Both of you are live in a household where you and your spouse are the only ones in the house, humans in the house. And both of them are what I call serious friends of the work, but they don't participate actively in the kind of work we're doing, right? So what if you set out to do an invocational dinner for these two individuals, each one separately, of course. And you took the steps that Simon is talking about for us, where you you begin, you literally enter the space in a particular manner. You enter the space in a particular manner in which you can begin a process.
In Second Life, in the people res in spaces, that's just how they enter. It's quite surprising. They were nothing, and then that, poof, there's a character.
So,
but that's that space.
Well, what I'm talking about is putting on that space,
yeah,
in a sense.
But then by then, you're wearing that character, are you sure?
So this would be the form of an invocational dinner where the other participant...
I'm in surprise.
You can do whatever you'd like, if you'd like to.
Hey, Ivan, you want to sit here?
And so the other individual isn't necessarily part of the agreement to do that. My point is that when you do something like this, you're working to transform the food. Several individuals have indicated that when they are in a different space, the people around them are also affected. We say, oh, that's a simple, I already know that. I just know that already. Oh, that's an ongoing experiment. That's an experiment that never ends. And that's in a certain way, a duty that we have one to another. I had a long conversation with someone last night who had some issues about people that were doing stuff in their space. And after a long part of the conversation, we got to, yeah, but what is your presence like in this space? You know what I mean? Like, how are you in that space? What are you bringing to it? So you come to the space with that. You could use one of the two lines that, I don't know, that I think that Mark has kind of taken to the next level in the prayer absolute. And you can initiate in that way. Like when you physically move into the space, what would you say, Mark?
We used to ring doorbells.
Go ahead, Simon.
If I am here in Jenna, it's like when I'm entering the space, shape-shifting or stepping into the character of the intended presence in that space. In motion, allowing my presence come to thee.
Okay, so listen to those words very carefully. Now you're entering into the kitchen. And look at the words specifically that Mark has said there. Or let's parse what you're saying there, Simon, okay? In motion, you're physically moving, right? But what's the next term? Bowing. In motion, bowing. So you bow to the sacred space. As you enter the space, you bow to that space. Okay? And then my presence comes to thee. Right? What if you entered your kitchen in that way? Not in the normal way of, oh, criminy, I've got to get this thing, I've got to get dinner made, and then I've got to go to the this, and I've got to go do that, and I've got to wash the dish. If you come in like that, what if you actually believed some of the things that we're talking about here? Now, I don't mean as theoretical ideas, but I mean as living modalities that we are talking about the electrical presence of the individual affecting other individuals. This is something that you should be experimenting with daily. I know one individual that experiments with this every day. This is an important part of that person's work. Other people, oh, it's an interesting idea, and then you kind of remember it again. But what if you set out to do that? So now you enter your kitchen and are in vocational dinner, and you enter it with motion, bowing. So you leave your ego on the other side of the line. Right, Mark? Isn't that part of what occurs when you move in that manner? The human ego gets left behind.
And he writes a second statement that says, humbly with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee.
So now somehow, and for me, these are very real things. The moving into the space itself is an act, not an accident. It's an action that you take. Over the years, I've used the word transit many, many, many times. For me, it's an active principle of moving from one space to another. The key to doing it is the first line in the octave there, right? In motion, bowing. Because as soon as I can do that, I have the key, the literal key, to move into that space. That's a key. It's like a key to, you know, get into your house or use some people for the car, whatever. So the key into that space is in motion bowing. Now I'm in the space. What do I do? You've entered because you've bowed, and now humbly, but not passively. Mark says to us, with heart alive. Right? Heart alive.
Yeah, I'm really.
Huh?
The second one.
You like that one?
No, I prefer to. The first one was a little bit.
Yeah. It spaces you because you're in transit.
Oh, well, peripheral vision.
You transit into that other space,
yeah.
But now you're in the space.
Nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows for sure what to do. But at least you get there, right?
Well.
No.
That's the first step, as Jenna is saying, is at least you get there. What happens is that you then begin. What's the third line in the prayer again? Does anybody remember? Ivan, he's way over there. Can't remember, he didn't have his book. Nobody remembers.
Everybody remembers not making any sudden moves.
That's not even in
no,
it.
No, I didn't think so. So I'm going to be real quiet. I can't wait to find out, though. Again.
With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee.
Yeah.
Okay, so Silverdale shows up and brings us. So what do I do when I'm in this heart alive space now? With clear mind.
Hopefully.
That's the job. With clear mind, I have the ability then to begin to actually cut a carrot apart or make.
Oh, that's true. You're
something.
In the kitchen.
So I've entered mm-hmm. into the kitchen, and I've done it using those keys.
Heavy metal.
And now, how do I know to do it? Because with clear mind, I can invoke that. Those three things are coming together. If you're aware of that, the motion bowing. You're aware of that, and with heart alive, and now you have clear mind, they all come into synchronization, then what happens?
You press around. No, you go in.
No, you're already
you're
in.
There. Well, you're just the start. Where is the start button?
You when are you're... the start button.
Okay.
It happens in a certain way, I want to say automatically, but you've put in a lot of work.
At some point, you notice that
you
it started.
And what has started is the emanation of your presence has started, and that's what goes into the food. Half World, can you imagine doing this for the person you cook for virtually every night? I mean, I know exactly what your kitchen looks like. Let's compare and contrast for a minute, okay? So now you're in the space that Mark has helped us unlock. We're in that space. We're in the kitchen. We're clear. We're starting to do our work. Contrast that to the same physical locale doing the same task, but you're pissed off because you have to make dinner. What does that do to the physical food? Does it do anything?
Probably nothing good. Pardon? It absorbs it, maybe. It's part of the space.
Lost Horizon is saying, he's taking the easy way out. He says, according to this, it does. We're not talking philosophy. I'm asking, does it?
I say yes.
Stand on a position. Take a stand. Place your rod in the ground. Take a stand. Yes, it does.
So,
yes,
it's variable. It is variable.
It is variable. What do you bring to it? What blessings do you bring to it?
Yeah. We talked about that perhaps in another example. David, remember when we talked about the kosher meat?
Yes.
The way that has been sacrificed, the animal, in the way that the rabbi kills that animal for food, it's not the same that shoot the animal with a bullet in the brain, you know, or the same the natives when they go hunting, they allow permission first to kill the animal that is going to be served for food. So there's a whole reverence into this animal that is being sacrificed for ourselves. That's a totally different space. The food is being profane or contaminated, but intentions.
By fast food, right? By fast food. We're addicted to fast food, whether it's McDonald's or whatever, the Wendy's, the various different fast food locales, versus slow food. Slow food that works with intentionality. But I'm really curious to ask the question, do you think this is true? Do you, I don't want to use the word believe.
Food is food, it's going to be okay. Its origins, you're going to take in some. That's what happens at the conversion. Of you and or particles. In fast food, there's going to be a lot of oil. I guess like whatever those. But
they're made with thoroughly unconsciousness. Thorough unconsciousness by definition.
Well, yeah, but it does seem like it is run so that it's turnkey and the people just automatically are there, and it is like in transit. Situation. The fact that we have so much fast food means that we're often in transit and not developing any part of our life field.
Right.
Just passing through.
Right. We're not
because
developing. That's a good point. We're
and
not developing.
It's still food. It still comes from the earth. Wherever you are, it comes from there.
Well, I question whether it necessarily rises to the level. As we take food up into our personal cosmos, it awakens to our own extent of consciousness. What we eat becomes part of us and partakes of our own degree of consciousness. You were saying Lost Horizon?
It's just neutral.
So he's saying, well, they can't hear you.
Yeah.
So he's saying that the taking in of unconscious food is neutral in a sense. It feeds the historical personality in its own certain way. But if you're trying to do something to enhance your consciousness, then it does make a difference. The type of food, the method of preparation of the food. And what was the last one of the three in the land of that paragraph again? Go ahead and look it up. If no, the other paragraph on bottom of 136.
That's true. You won't have
and the way, also the way
the concentration
it is ingested is extremely vital. Okay. So let's say that you have the opportunity to cook in this manner for others. I know that there's some of you don't cook at all, never going to cook, and are proud of it. So be it. But you know, that's not the point. The point is that you are working with a vibrational tone in the food that we buy, grow, if it might be the case, or prepare and then ingest. And so what we're doing is we're punching a hole. We're punching a hole into the whole sleep mechanism surrounding food, so that it's not just, I gotta eat. It's also part of the process. Simon, I think you need to read some of the stuff on the chat.
Yeah, I'm gonna cut up a little bit before that.
Okay, catch up where you need to.
Catch up before in regards to Piangio says, yeah, pissed off effect of the food, I mean the effect in how we approach that the elements. Mark says, and pissed off affects the invocation of whatever is being invoked. Jim says, there are cultures which bless every grain of rice before cooking. They have no doubt of the need to do this at holy gatherings. And I agree with these two. Jim says again, I have eaten such a food, and it does maintain your level of vibrations.
Okay.
Fog Lady says, the energy just goes stronger here.
Yeah.
Piangio brings a comment that is, it is the basis of the Eucharistia, the Eucharist.
The Eucharist.
The Eucharistia, yeah, the Eucharist.
We'll get into that in a minute. Well put. Thank you, Piangio.
And I have a question here for Mark that says,
yes.
especially since, as in the earlier paragraph, the food partakes in our being. So what kind of food do we want partaking of us? Question. That is the question.
Each individual, if you're coming from the point of your higher vibratory self, must answer that question for yourself. If you start the interface with this food in such a way that you have that intention in it, it'll start to be clear to you what works for you and what doesn't work for you. If you're unconscious about it, it won't matter. Because if we listed out right now several foods that are good and several foods that are bad, then people would just follow them and go, why am I following this?
Yeah, it's very individual. We're talking, it's in the chemistry realm. I just leave it for now. I'm still thinking electrical, so.
But it is electrical, too, because there's certain things...
It will end up being that way. It is from the beginning that it will really end up being that when it hits a human consciousness. The interface is an extremely impressive event for the public realm, the point of view of the food itself.
Also the point of view of the food, which...
Not even also. It's absolutely right there. If
for instance, the kitchen must be free of all contaminants, even negative emotions. Those who cook for the work community must not smoke tobacco, because toxins come through the hands in the form of sweat and oil. And I just will gradually get into the concepts of contamination, but I want to just talk a little bit about that right now. When you're cooking, your hands should be very, very clean, because what's on your hands goes on your food, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And so,
it's okay. I train cats, so I'm listening with avid interest, but I'm just quietly.
But I'm just saying that you just think about this, that's an issue. So, so just keep the space as clean as you would like it to vibrationally reflect into
you
yourself.
You want to rise higher than a five-year-old or the pets, but
it'll
happen by itself as well if you agree to go with the program of a spatial chemical interaction, actually not even an intervention, because you let it happen as it develops. And you add in things as you go along.
Sounds in the kitchen are as important as they are in the work chamber. Loud sounds, popular music can be very destructive. For this and other reasons, young children, which is to say those children under the age of 8, should not be allowed in the work community kitchen, although they have a divorce. The combination of foods must make sense, not just for taste and aesthetics, but also chemically.
That's important.
There's no question there's a chemical component to this. We're not focusing on that right now. There's clearly a chemical component. I'm also indicating that there's a vibrational electrical component to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with that. All food is chemical, and that substances are extracted as soon as they are chewed in the mouth and mixed with saliva.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The digestive process then continues in the stomach, small intestine, and the colon. As far as ingestion is concerned, we should have learned to take our place at the table at least a half hour before actually beginning the meal, during which time we might choose to read, sing, or tell stories. Occasionally, we may decide to just remain silent during this period of time. And Pianjo, you might, and Simon, you might find this interesting. Because I know that the group out of the Girard Street Art Gallery has invocational meals. And Pianjo, you might consider experimenting with the concept of an invocational meal. And one way you could do it is, I know you meet, I think, on Tuesday nights, and you could have people join for dinner, come a little bit hour or so early, and designate two people, for instance, to be the cooks. They go out, they shop on behalf of the community. They shop, they come early, prepare, and then make and serve the meal for the community. That will teach you something. That's, you know, so I'm trying to say that with Chikoba and with Pathworld, you have a chance to do that, but it's a teeny bit one-sided, but I guarantee it'll be appreciated. So if you do get a chance to experiment with a group meal, and I know Pathworld, you have meetings on Tuesdays, maybe you could have one or two of those during the month be a meal and experiment with this concept of a invocational meal. This is non-denominational here. It's not, you know, some church or something. It's just using attention and presence. Anything else, Simon?
I have a make some comment about a question that Mark had when we were talking about the invocation as we were making the food. He was it goes like this. Is it what is clear mind? With maybe that let me track it back again. With clear mind. Yeah, so.
Okay. When you are making the food, you're focusing, you're bringing all of the elements in the first three parts of the prayer together. And one is, what is in your mind is you're doing the job of making the salad. You're not thinking about the last episode of Game of Thrones or the movie you're going to go see later that night. You're actually engaged with the process. If you look at a great cook or great, you can stop at a sushi chef and you can see they aren't thinking about a lot of other things.
You think,
they're focused on what they're doing. And it's that focus that begins to be the ground for clear mind. Okay? Anything else, Simon? Good.
No, that's it.
Good. So Pianja is going to do that experiment. This is an experimental class, okay? And I would love it if people would experiment. I don't know if the deer is on, but she also is in a relationship with someone who's also very friendly to this form of work. Experiment with the concept of the invocational dinner. Find ways and means to do it. This is how we develop ourselves. We don't develop ourselves by reading books or even coming to the class. We find it by doing it. And then Simon, you're, for instance, you're a single individual. You live by yourself, right?
Yes.
So one form is you could do this for yourself.
Correct.
Instead of the meal just being something quick because you've got to eat before you go, or, you know, you're supposed to eat anyway because you're supposed to eat, right?
Right.
I'm taking the fifth on organic bodies just for like That's 5
okay.
or 10 minutes.
That's okay.
So I'm listening objectively and just taking it in, and the machine is hearing this.
So you might, so then we have three forms of experimentation with the invocational dinner. In the case of Path World and Pianjo, you have a number of people that you can work with, several people, and maybe formally announce we're going to attempt this and see what happens. It's important to record your findings, not just for yourself, but for others too. Then there's maybe you live with one other person, your spouse. Whether they're part of this or not, attempting to do an invocational dinner for the two of you. And then what happens when you do that? You'll be amazed, in my opinion, you're going to be amazed at what occurs. Or, in Simon's case, you prepare a meal for yourself. But if you come to serve your higher self and you walk in the same manner, not every night or every meal, but maybe once a week, what if you did that? Isn't that interesting?
It is a way to kind of gently help. It is actually compassion, even from looking at it from another point of view, is compassion for the food because it gets to participate in your consciousness. So if you're in
this
a good mood, it's good to eat. If you're in a bad mood, it's okay to just like go, okay, what's going to make it better? I don't know. Eventually, we will experience ourselves being eaten, and so I'm listening.
Okay, this is
the situation.
Okay, so
we will experience it on the other
hand. The second time you brought that idea up, so I'm going to go into it.
Go for it.
As far as ingestion is concerned, we should have learned to take our place at the table, so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
The awakening of the machine is very important because as we take food up into our personal cosmos, it awakens to our own extent of consciousness, which is to say, what we eat becomes part of us and partakes in our own degree of consciousness. We would say that the food, as it passes the portal of the mouth, wakes up just a little.
It does.
The food wakes up just a little. We must respect this awakening. What if we were asleep and suddenly found ourselves in the mouths of some creature, which then began to chew us between giant teeth? Well, that's what the piece of the carrot's going to do. Because it is in that process, it awakens, it comes alive in an almost indiscernible way, but it does.
Carrots are easy.
Because it's transforming.
Yeah.
It's transforming from one form to another. As the food awakens, which is to say, as it passes the portal of the lips, one should give the command, stop. In respect of its awakening.
Okay.
As it passes, we should also say mentally, I hope I did not keep you waiting.
Well, I probably did.
It is a good practice to not stab the food with our forks every time we eat, but pick up the morsel by sliding the fork under it. This is especially good to do with vegetables, which have been picked from our own garden and are still very much alive. Of course, I don't mean every meal, but maybe special meals such as Shabbat. If we really think about it for just a moment or two, we will recognize the whole process, and this is what I wanted to get to tonight, the whole process of preparation and ingestion of food should reflect the laws of hospitality in the sense that our body is a house into which we are receiving something which has been, because we have taken it into our biological machine as a new part of our machine, whose consciousness or lack of it, the food now shares that.
That's what I mean. Make it a good 12 hours or whatever.
It is raised to our level of consciousness.
Yeah.
Bringing the food up to the mouth, chewing and swallowing should all resemble lovemaking. It is said that your ingestion of food reflects how you make love. Some tribal customs recognize this, as the women of the tribe observe the eating habits of the men closely to determine who would make the best lover. Even in contemporary centers of civilization, this knowledge is not totally unknown, and many initiated women today also observe men for the same signs. In any case, even the uninitiated can see that someone who crams food down the throat, chews only once or twice, hardly noticing the food or its smell, taste, or texture, would make a miserable lover, because there's not paying any attention. You're not paying attention for it. And therefore, it stays at a very low level. Now, we'll end on this next paragraph, which is your point. When the food passes into our personal cosmos in a subjective sense, it goes to heaven.
Hopefully.
Because hope and fear are always there, but it's based on our consciousness. So if our consciousness is high when we take it in, it can go to heaven.
It can.
Because it passes if we are in that space, is what I'm saying.
It will have to if we're in the space.
If we're in the space.
It's automatic. But if it finds its way there.
If we put in the effort to be in the exalted consciousness, the food then goes to heaven.
That's true.
Now, try not to put a qualifier.
Okay. Qualifier.
I'm making a point.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it passes upward from the vegetable kingdom into the human sphere by assimilation into our whole organic formation, and at the same time, takes upon itself the same level of consciousness common to a human being. It has passed from the form of vegetable to the form of human. Subjectively, the food has died, and in its individual annihilation as a vegetable creature, has found itself resurrected in a higher form of life. That's the opportunity we have. Of course it's possible that it won't happen. Of course. That's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that it's possible for a higher invocational vibration to occur in which that transformation into go from the lower to the higher can occur if you prepare the ground. Okay? That's all I'm saying.
David.
Go ahead.
A couple of comments. One that I, as you're listening to you, I definitely comes to my mind the cleansing effect of the radiations of presence, the strong radiation of presence that is affecting on us, but at the same time that effect of the cleansing radiation of our presence is cleansing too the food that is going to be partake of our being, of a higher self. That's one comment. I'm going to read that apropos of this, antimatter says, during my transition to being here in California, I have been in a state of receiving all of a sudden the log move. Here we go again, sorry. Antimatter, during my transition to being here in California, I have been in a state of receiving all my food through the work and service to others. It has been a strong reminding factor of being fed invocationally and nurtured by the work.
Nice.
Mark Roach, a Hindu prayer before eating. The food is God. The plates, spoon, etc. are God. The eater is God. The fire of hunger is God. The act of eating is God.
So, I'd be very interested to see if anybody experiments with this during the week. We're going to revisit that last paragraph that I read. There's another element to it I want to bring in. It's a very important paragraph for the kind of work we're doing here. But we're going to, what I guess I'm saying is that electrically and vibrationally, we have the opportunity to do pragmatic work that we can look at and wonder about the effects of the work we're doing. One individual that I work with a lot, or speak with a lot, has specific data on that experiment. And his comment is always, it's slow in coming. A lot of us want just to flip a switch and then there you are. You think that's how it happens because you have been transported to higher spaces rapidly. What I'm talking about is transporting yourself, doing bits and pieces of work, a little bit of a small stone each time to build a solid wall that you can stand upon. Yes, it's slow, but it's a worthy work. It's worth it to do. Attention and presence. These are great gifts that we've been given. So we've been initiated into the present to this planet. We know not necessarily what our purpose is, but we do know we're here. And we're discovering the fact that we have these tools to work with. So now this chapter has to do with an invocational dinner for ourselves, because when we're serving even just ourselves by ourselves, we're serving the higher in ourselves. And the food, if it's transformed, If I am in that space as I'm eating it, the food goes up, and there's an opportunity for that to occur. Or when I'm serving a friend, a spouse, or if I am in an invocational group or a work group, then you have an opportunity that's even broader in a case like this to work with the idea of an invocational dinner. Ivan, I think there are there not talks of the months on invocational dinner?
There are.
I believe there are. Voluntary evolution. Okay. Ivan's saying that he thinks there's a talk of the month about it, and also commentary on it in voluntary evolution, but also in Seven Bodies of Man, there's a chapter. I don't recall that at the moment, but that's... So, does it make sense what I'm saying? Does anybody intend on trying to experiment with this? Go ahead with the comments, Simon.
I get two last comments. One, Mark Roach says, it seems that reminding ourselves of such an awareness automatically triggers us into the right state. That would be more like heaven for food.
Yes,
antimatter,
you're right.
Antimatter says, like the act of adoration of the human biological machine towards the beloved.
Perfect. The act of adoration, and as we talked about that in HBM, this is what we're talking about. That's a higher force that comes to bear. If we can have exercise the adoration during these times, a lot happens. A lot happens. Do you think that you will experiment with this during the next week?
Certainly, yeah.
Some people are saying yes. So Lost Horizon doesn't have a forum to cook, but he eats a lot of meals in the work community, and so he says he's experimenting with it as he's eating more and more now. And that's how he can work with it. Who else said yes? Simon?
DeAngelo says yes, but we have plans for next Tuesday. But yes, for the next week, if all people wish to do this.
Very good. You'll see, and if they do, you will. Okay. That was it.
I came in late, but was wondering if talking about an invocational dinner together.
Yeah. Well.
So. Even members of our group can be together, although separate.
Well, we don't have that plan. That's I understand what you're saying, but that hasn't come up yet. If people actually, so just Piandra's the only one that actually said yes.
I'm saying yes.
So Susan is saying yes.
I would say, you know, it would probably be a limited. I think just having read and knowing the information brings a certain invocation to the act of eating.
Well, I'll fill you in on the other details of the class later on, okay?
Okay.
And different ways for people to do it, whether they're individuals, couples, or have a group of people to work with.
Right, okay.
Okay. Interesting. On many levels, interesting. So we'll call that for this evening then. And this will conclude this evening's class on chapter 13, Thought for Food.
Thought for Food?
And we'll look forward to seeing everybody again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock as we continue our exploration of the hidden work by E.J. Gold. Thank you. Good night.
Just David, there are some other people saying yes to that, I guess.
Oh, good. Who?
Lost Horizon and Oak Lady, I guess. Password. I don't know if they are referring to that, but anyways, that's it.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Simon.
Thank you. Thank you so much to you.
Good night.
Molly. Great to see you, Molly.